When Joseph's brothers came to Egypt, having run out of food, Joseph recognized them, but took specific steps to avoid identifying himself. In fact, he misled them. What does this tell us about the usefulness of truth and how we should relate to it? Welcome to Probe. This is our final segment on beginnings and belongings, conversations on the book of Genesis. My conversation partners are again Paul Dibdall, Larry Vavirka, and I'd like for you two men to address that question. What does the story of Joseph dealing with his brothers, what does that tell us about the nature and use of truth?
I have wondered about that. And let's take the opposite tack. What if he had, you know, immediately made disclosed to them his identity and their relationship to him, and just laid it out on the line? We tend to value straightforward statements, and we tend to feel manipulated when we are not given the truth, so we tend to resent that. But then there are other occasions. Now, I think of our missiologist here. I mean, I think back to my call portering days, and our tendency is not to tell people right up front, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist Christian, and I'm interested in your becoming a member of my church. Well, and yet, on the other hand, I remember call portering with one brother who had the Bible story right up there under his arm, approached the door and said, we're showing the Bible story to Holmes today. Have you had an opportunity to see this in your physician's office? Could we come in and let you see this set of stories about the Bible? But that quickly got things defined. I mean, we didn't spend a lot of time talking on the porch. People either invited us in or they didn't. We might mow through 10 houses very quickly, but then the person who invited us in was there, and it was a quality kind of interaction. They wanted us there. They knew what we were about. And so I'm in a way kind of torn. There's something to say for that. And yet, on the other hand, we can, by virtue of saying who we are and putting it out there right away, we can prejudice people or tap into their prejudice. If Joseph had said right away, I'm Joseph, your brother, who you treated the way you did, what would he have gained? What would he have lost that he gained by not letting them know that right away? It's a question that I have.
Paul. Doesn't he want to know about the details from home? And also he wants to learn something about the character of his brothers.
I think that's an interpretation we've often heard, and I think that's a legitimate one. Have these men changed?
Right. Mm-hmm. And for him to tell them initially who he is, in their fear, he's not sure. They may say, oh, yes, our mm-hmm. brother as well, father as well, we'll go back and bring them here, and then he may never see them again. Mm-hmm. So that there may have been something to gain in his at least masking who he was initially, but mm-hmm. it still leaves a question. Is it all right to mask the truth or avoid disclosing the full truth if there's a good reason for it? You know, we still have that issue, I guess.
Well, can you think of any examples in the Bible other than this one that would be helpful?
Helpful or problematic? Mm.
And in your point of view?
Well, just we're here nearing the end of Genesis at the beginning of the book of Exodus. There's a case of the Hebrew midwives mm-hmm. who seem to, again, hide the truth or twist the truth when it comes to their report to Pharaoh. And it seems as if God responds rather positively to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm leaving out some of the details, but it's right there in the first chapter of Exodus.
I'm thinking of the life of Jesus and the messianic secret. You know, don't tell people who I am. Now, he can say to the Samaritan woman, I am he, I'm the one, the promised one. To his own people, he did not dare put that out there because of their definition and misconception that they had with regard to their messianic expectation. So he can, over and over again, he tries to play that down or to work from behind that truth about himself without stating it right out front and demanding some sort of response. He wanted to be able to get his message across first and clarify, even change their idea of who the Messiah was by his famous series of I Am statements.
So what you're saying is that the goal clearly shapes how we use the evidence en route to that goal. Now, let me just tell you one funny little story from my own experience. A number of years ago, Pacific Press, or maybe it was Review and Herald, one of the two Adventist presses, was putting out a book on the Ten Commandments. And they asked me to write the article on Thou Shalt Not Bear False Witness Against Your Neighbor. Well, as a student of the Old Testament, the one generalization that you can say from the Old Testament is that when you have a cruel tyrant chasing innocent people, that's the one place where the Old Testament indicates you could say he went that away when he actually went that away. But now, it's fairly clear strictures there. If it's a cruel tyrant chasing innocent people, then you can mislead them. See? Well, I wrote the article up, realizing that the way I was writing it probably wasn't going to be satisfactory. The first time, I basically said, under certain circumstances, it's all right to tell lies. Now, I knew that didn't look right in print, but with kind of tongue-in-cheek, I wrote it up and sent it off to the editors, suspecting what they would say. And sure enough, they sent it back and said it would need to be redone, and so I did. But I got an amazing insight. As I was writing that article up, and I ended up calling it something like this, Thou shalt not hurt thy neighbor with lies or with the truth. And that ties in with William Blake's statement that I got from C.S. Lewis. A truth that's told with bad intent beats all the lies you can invent. You can be incredibly damaging with truth.
I think, too, of Jesus' statement to his disciples, that there's more truth to tell, but it's more than you can now bear.
Yeah, that's right.
So even Jesus withheld truth, apparently, because of his interest and love for those that would be receiving it.
I was thinking of another story. The leper that he healed, and he said, don't tell the priests who healed you. In other words, withhold the whole story until they have evaluated your case. Yeah. Because if you tell them that I'm the one who has healed you, you may prejudice their judgment. So the truth can get you a reaction that then is lost in the translation or in the process if you disclose too much.
And I would say also that if it's a troubling message, a potentially hurtful one, most of us are rather grateful when the bad news is massaged into place very carefully. Mm-hmm. Our good dean, Dave Thomas, is a master at dealing with troublesome news in a positive way. And I think it's much better to err on that side than rather than come down with a ton of bricks on someone who could really be hurt by it. Mm-hmm. I think this story is a fascinating one because it raises all those kinds of questions that we have to deal with every day. Shall I say something? Shall I keep quiet? It's Paul's question, shall I come to you with stick or with love and spirit of gentleness? And the truth is part of that story of how we deal with other people. And the end story here, and I hope we can have enough time to do it right, is at the very end of Joseph's story. His father has blessed the boys, each one of them, and his father has passed away. I'd like to read the few verses here from Genesis chapter 50, beginning with verse 15, because it's really quite an amazing commentary on sin, on forgiveness, on providence, all of those things wrapped together. Realizing that their father was dead, Joseph's brothers said, What if Joseph still bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong that we did to him? So they approached Joseph, saying, Your father gave this instruction before he died. Say to Joseph, I beg you, forgive the crime of your brothers and the wrong they did in harming you. Now, therefore, please forgive the crime of the servants of the God of your father. Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also wept, fell down before him, and said, We are here as your slaves. But Joseph said to them, Do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? Even though you intended to do harm to me, God intended it for good, in order to preserve a numerous people as he is doing today. So have no fear. I myself will provide for you and your little ones. In this way he reassured them, speaking kindly to them. It's an amazing conclusion of the book of Genesis there, and I find that very moving. Not only the spirit of forgiveness that you find in Joseph, but the fact that the impact of sin, wrongdoing, can have such deep roots. Even if the other person forgives, you may not be able to forgive yourself. Now, maybe these in the last few minutes here, I didn't warn you guys about this, but do you have any last snapshots of the book of Genesis we've gone through, touched on a little bit on much of it? Anything there that you would like to share with our listeners here is kind of your...
Well, you know, verse 20 is kind of the summary of the book of Genesis. You know, you have all of this chaos and whatever going on, but God is faithful and turns it into good in order to preserve the life of people, of his people. And his promise to continue to take care of us and our children. Those are reassuring words that even touch our hearts and mine.
Yeah. Paul? And I really wouldn't have anything to add to that. I think Genesis paints a picture of a good and gracious God, and we've seen that illustrated time after time this quarter. And that's a wonderful text, I think, to conclude with there.
And even when you come to the New Testament, you know, God has worked with the Old Testament as a Christian perspective. We have said in Jesus Christ, it's not just the Jews, but it's everyone. In Christ, there's neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male or female, but we are all one in Christ Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And this working with his people, wanting them to be one in Christ, is such a marvelous gift, and that's what we've experienced this quarter as we've gone through the book of Genesis. Thanks to both of you, and my thanks to Susan Michael, our program engineer, to all of you for listening in. For Probe, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194 or email us at probe@wwc.edu. Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week at this time with Probe.